The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 16, Text 56, through Canto 6, Chapter 17, Text 3, given by Srila Ravinda Sarup Das on September the 29th, 1990, in Philadelphia.
The reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6. We're finishing up chapter 16 and going on to chapter 17 because there's no purports to the verses at the end of chapter 16. So first I'll go through and finish up chapter 16, which is the concluding discussion by Lord Shankarsana to Chitraketu. Starting with text 59, he says, remembering the great trouble found in the field of activities performed for fruitive results, and remembering how one receives the reverse of the results one desires, whether from material actions or from fruitive activities recommended in the Vedic literature, an intelligent man should cease from the desire for fruitive actions, for by such endeavors one cannot achieve the ultimate goal of life. On the other hand, if one acts without desires for fruitive results, or in other words, if one engages in devotional activities, he can achieve the highest goal of life with freedom from miserable conditions. Considering this, one should cease from material desires. It says here in the Sanskrit, phala viparyayam. This word, viparyaya, appears in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna tells Krishna, we shall achieve just the opposite of what we are after. I'm going to win a kingdom, but everybody will be killed, so everything will be just the opposite. He uses the same word. So sometimes, phalam, you want one thing and you get just the opposite. That's one remark there. So the Lord continues, 660, as husband and wife, a man and woman plan together to attain happiness and decrease unhappiness, working jointly in many ways. But because their activities are full of desires, these activities are never a source of happiness, and they never diminish distress. On the contrary, they are a cause of great unhappiness. It goes on, 61, 62. One should understand that the activities of persons who are proud of their material experience, the word here is Vijna Abhimaninam, and Prabhupada says in the purport, who think of themselves as full of scientific knowledge, and that's in the word for word. In the purport, he says, I'm proud of their material experience. So, different ways you can understand that word. So, these kinds of people think of themselves as full of scientific knowledge, are proud of their material experience. So the activities of these people bring only results contradictory to those such persons conceive while awake, sleeping, and deeply sleeping. One should further understand that the spirit soul, although very difficult for the materialist to perceive, is above all these conditions. And by the strength of one's discrimination, one should give up the desire for fruitive results in the present life and in the next. Thus becoming experienced in transcendental knowledge, one should become my devotee. And here Krishna says, jnana vijnana santukto, being fully satisfied in jnana and vijnana, that is to say, knowledge and practical application of the knowledge. As he says here, the word for word. 63. Persons who try to reach the ultimate goal of life must expertly observe the Supreme Absolute Person and the living entity, who are one in quality in their relationship as part and whole. This is the ultimate understanding of life. There is no better truth than this. 64. O King, if you accept this conclusion of mine, being unattached to material enjoyment, and hearing to me with great faith, and thus becoming proficient, and fully aware of knowledge and its practical application in life, jnana vijnana again, you will achieve the highest perfection by attaining me. 65. Last verse. Sukadeva Goswami continued, after thus instructing Chuchaketu and assuring him of perfection in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Spiritual Master, Jagat Guru, the Supreme Soul, Vishvatma, Shankarshan, disappeared from that place as Chuchaketu looked on. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 6th canto, 16th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled King Chuchaketu Eats the Supreme Lord. Now, chapter 17. Mother Parvati curses Chuchaketu. This man has a lot of adventures. His son dies, gets resurrected, meets the Supreme Personality of Godhead, gets cursed, and personally instructed, gets cursed by Parvati. One thing after another. A lot of ups and downs here. So I'll read the 7th, the summary. There's a summary in the beginning of this chapter, which I'll read. The 17th chapter is summarized as follows. This chapter describes Chuchaketu's receiving the body of an asura, or demon, because of joking with Lord Shiva. And now we're going to the next thing that happens to him. After personally talking with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, King Chuchaketu enjoyed life in his airplane with the women of the Vidyadhara planet. Engaged in the congregational chanting of the glories of the Lord, he began flying his plane and traveling in outer space. One day, while traveling like this, he wandered into the bowers, B-O-W-E-R-S, bowers, you know, wooded groves, bowers of Sumeru Mountain, where he came upon Lord Shiva embracing Parvati, surrounded by an assembly of siddhas, charanas, and great sages. Seeing Lord Shiva in that situation, Chuchaketu laughed very loudly. But Parvati became angry at him, very angry at him, and cursed him. Because of this curse, Chuchaketu later appeared as the demon Vritrasura. Chuchaketu, however, was not at all afraid of Parvati's curse, and thus he spoke as follows. Everyone in human society enjoys happiness and distress according to his past deeds, and in this way travels in the material world. Therefore, no one is responsible for his happiness and distress. One is controlled by the influence of material nature in the material world, yet one thinks himself the doer of everything. In this material world, which is made of the external energy of the Supreme Lord, one is sometimes cursed and sometimes favored. And thus he sometimes enjoys in the upper planetary systems and sometimes suffers in the lower planetary systems. But all these situations are the same because they are in the material world. None of these positions has any factual existence, for all of them are temporary. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller, because the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated under his control, while he nonetheless remains neutral to these different transformations of the material world in time and space. The material external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in charge of this material world. The Lord helps the world by creating situations for the living entities within it. When Chuchaketu spoke in this way, all the members in the great assembly in which Lord Shiva and Parvati were present were astonished. Then Lord Shiva began speaking about the devotees of the Lord. A devotee is neutral in all conditions of life, whether in the heavenly planets or hellish planets, whether liberated from the material world or conditioned by it, and whether blessed with happiness or subjected to distress. These are all merely dualities created by the external energy. Being influenced by the external energy, the living entity accepts a gross and subtle material body. And in this illusory position, he apparently suffers miseries. And although everyone is part and parcel of the Supreme, the so-called demigods consider themselves independent lords, and in this way, they are misled from understanding that all living entities are part of the Supreme. This chapter concludes by glorifying the devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, it's a summary of what's in this chapter called Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu. So, text 1, Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, after offering obeisances to the direction from which Ananta, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, had disappeared, Chitraketu began traveling in outer space as the head of the Vidyadharas. And then we have today text 2 and 3. And two is on the board, so we can now chant the Sanskrit. Being praised by great sages and saints, and by the inhabitants of Siddhaloka and Charanaloka, Chitraketu, the most powerful mystic yogi, wandered about enjoying life for millions of years. With bodily strength and senses free from deterioration, he traveled within the valleys of Sumeru Mountain, which is the place of perfection for various kinds of mystic power. In those valleys, he enjoyed life with the women of Vidyadhara Loka by chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, Hari, through the Prabhupada's purport. It is to be understood that Maharaj Chitraketu, although surrounded by beautiful women from Vidyadhara Loka, did not forget to glorify the Lord by chanting the holy name of the Lord. It has been proved in many places that one who is not contaminated by any material condition, who is a pure devotee engaged in chanting the glories of the Lord, should be understood to be perfect. Well, here's his condition now with Chitraketu. He's been promoted to this position as the best or a king of the Vidyadharas. And these are species of upper planets, Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, Vidyadhara Loka. So there, this is described his lifestyle. Wanders means he's wandering, he has an airplane, some kind of pleasure craft, spaceship. And he, Lakshanam Varsha Lakshanam, millions, hundreds of thousands times, hundreds of thousands of years, long time. And it says that his bodily strength, balindriya, his body and sensual strength remain powerful. You can understand why people want to go to the upper planetary systems. So within the valley of that great mountain, he various valleys apparently went from place to place. They're very scenic and many things are there. So the point is, he was enjoying with the women of the Vidyadhara planets, but chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord Hari, he said. So he remained always in a position, an uncontaminated position. It was so elevated that even though he was in this position of material enjoyment, because he was a great devotee, is not an ordinary vidyadhara who take advantage of these wonderful circumstances for material enjoyment, but because he was a great devotee, because he had received the blessing of Anantadeva, he never was attracted, even in those circumstances. So this can actually happen. Of course, in the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness, one is supposed to avoid temptation. Therefore, doesn't associate with members of the opposite sex. Why is that? Because the mind becomes captivated and one comes onto the bodily platform of life. People have material bodies of the male and female species to put each other into maya and to keep each other into maya. This is the nature of the material world. And the living entity sets out to be the enjoyer. This is the system. So therefore, it is not to be trusted. And one should always consider, as a matter of policy, no matter how long one has been a devotee or how advanced one is, one should actually always consider oneself in a dangerous position, because it's easy to be overcome by this sex desire. And as soon as sex desire is there, then there is automatically not love of Krishna. Because it's the ultimately that sex desire, sexual desire, lust, kama, which has different forms. The in Freudian psychology, there's a word, libido, which means a kind of generalized lust to enjoy, of which the main expression is sexual. But because this lust also has different other expressions, and Prabhupada talked about that, sometimes one will see that the sexual drive becomes channeled in other things, specifically the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. Prabhupada described these as the subtle forms of sexual desire. Because in any case, it's a desire to lord it over material nature. So they're the gross and the subtle forms. Subtle forms mean they take place. There may not be any gross sexual activity. The wife of Mao Zedong is supposed to have famously remarked that she visited America, I think, and she said, "American women are foolish. They're all into sex when power is so much more satisfying," she said. Well, there it is, profit, adoration, and distinction. So these are the forms of bewilderment of the conditioned soul that thinks he can become the enjoyer of the material energy. So it begins with this sex desire. And ultimately, anyone who actually has the goal in life of becoming free from the material world has to understand that one has to become free from sex desire. Otherwise, you come back, because there's no sexual desire in the spiritual world. That desire can only be satisfied in the material world. Of course, the origin of sexual desire is there in the spiritual world. That is Krishna prema. Every soul is endowed with Krishna prema. But when the soul turns away from Krishna and instead wants to become the Lord himself, he is provided with a false identity. Sometimes it seemed that the criminal wanting to escape the police has his body surgically altered and then gets a whole new set of identity. When we want to become criminals and avoid the service of Krishna, Krishna obligingly provides us with a new identity. Our intrinsic identity is a spiritual being who is the servant of Krishna. So let's say we don't want to be the servant of Krishna. What does he do? He gives us a false identity. That false identity is called a material body and a set of identification papers. I am this, I am that. And then you're allowed to identify yourself with the material body. And along with that, in the process, the endowment of the soul, which is Krishna Prema, is converted into lust to enjoy this material world. That lust to enjoy this material world, we all know how strong it is. So from that we can understand how much actually we love Krishna. Prabhupada said that the instinct for self-preservation is actually love of Krishna. He describes that the instinct for self-preservation is the idea of protecting the self. And one is in the illusory energy, one thinks that the self is the material body, and his efforts are to protect the self by protecting the body. But then we become more advanced, we understand that the self is not the body, but the soul. And then we understand that each soul is a particle of one supreme soul, who is the soul of all souls. And so the word Atma, or self, actually, properly, applies to Krishna. He is the actual self. So that self-protection is the desire to see Krishna grow and prosper and prevail. But because now we're in the condition of thinking of ourselves as the Supreme, it is our idea to grow, prosper, prevail, enjoy, have many sexual partners, have children, little replicas of myself running around, start a dynasty, and so on. This is the Maya. So that's the original of the sex desire. It has its origin. Everything here has its origin there. So it's actually love for Krishna. So if we actually want to go back to Godhead, if we actually want to make spiritual advancement, the spiritual advancement is measured by how far we're becoming free from lust. It's very simple. These are the things that, you know, Swami Mayananda will not teach you. Because he'll lose disciples. And so you have thousands and thousands of people studying philosophy and yoga who are trying to figure out how their sex life is actually divine. Because it's all one. There can't be any duality. I'm having sex, so somehow or other my sex is God. That's what they're trying to do. But they don't understand that they're in the illusory energy. And it's perverted expression of this. Actually it is. It's a perverted manifestation of love of God. But you'll not experience anything like bliss. You think you can name it ecstasy. You can name it divine. But your pleasure lasts 15 seconds. And then there's so much other things that go along with it, and of material entanglement. And in the end, it kills you. So, it does, actually. Sex is a cause of death. It's the main cause of death. People are worried, you know, right now, because sex will cause AIDS. They'll catch AIDS from sex and then die. But sex causes death under any conditions, even safe sex. It's all no safe sex, practically speaking. If it's for religious principles under restrictions, then it can be safe. Because sex life causes this identification of the self with the material body more than anything else. That's the problem. As soon as there is even sex desire, even sexual fantasy, even on the subtle platform, or to speak of the gross platform, then there's identification of the self, of the material body. It can't be helped. It's just like taking a drug. And that's the problem. So as soon as that notion is there, that I can be the enjoyer, I can be the controller, and one especially gets involved in this gross or subtle sexual activity, then the notion is there of enjoying the material world. Very, very powerful when there's an attractive member of the opposite sex. One immediately thinks the material world's not so bad. It's a good place. Somehow or other, you know, we'll get that little cottage in the West. And love will go on forever and we'll never die and there'll be happy endings and so on. One is immediately this illusion of the material world is there. So actually, it has to be avoided. And not only, as I say, one has to become free from sexual desire. But actually the strength, the extent to which we are free from sexual desire, that will be the strength we have to spread the Hare Krishna movement. As soon as subtle or gross contamination by sexual desires, there are so many other distractions offer themselves to us. And unfortunately, all over, even in this movement, people are putting themselves in dangerous positions with regard to sex desire by some bad habits, specifically the bad habit of watching television and going to cinema. All over the place in this movement, it's become more and more accepted as an all right thing to do. And in almost every case on television and movies, there's some kind of representation of sex life, even PG, parental guidance, what to speak of. They don't call them X now, NC-17, they changed the rating system. No children under 17, whatever the restriction is, almost always, unless it's got a, you know, Walt Disney G rating, it's going to have some sexual representation, usually fairly graphic these days. And television also. Even if there's no sex, like for example, I read in the newspaper some time ago that one producer of television shows, his innovation for shows they called jiggle shows, because the main attraction of these, they were situation comedies, but they all featured women were wearing t-shirts and they had no brassieres or anything on underneath, and then the plot always called for them to be jumping up and down and running around so that everyone could watch their breasts underneath the t-shirt. This is sex life. Now, one form of indulging in sex life is watching. It's called voyeurism. And so it's contemplating the object of the senses, and it's breaking the principles to watch, to hear, to read about. So it's not a good thing. What to speak of immediately, especially They're so good at this in the movies, in making everything look so attractive, whereas in real life it's never like that. But they have these movie stars who all have perfect bodies and perfect faces. And even if they don't have perfect bodies and perfect faces, they know how to photograph them and light the thing so it looks good. And so it just really creates this incredible illusion of material enjoyment. So anyone who becomes habituated to watching television and movies and things like that is sure to become captivated by a sexual desire. And all of America is captivated by a sexual desire more and more. Everyone knows that everybody has VCRs, so they can actually watch pornographic movies. Just like in ISKCON, people buy the VCR so they can watch ITV, but it's really so they can watch Hollywood movies. And among the carnies, the excuse is we're buying our VCR so we can watch Hollywood movies, but it's actually so they can watch in the privacy of their own homes pornography. And you get most suburban tract houses, and they have some kids, and you ask them, well, you know, where do your parents keep their pornographic videos? The kids know. They know where they are, and when nobody's at home, they get them down and watch them too. What do you want to bet? This is what's going on. So it's all just forms of sex desire. We have to be careful, because this is a country which more and more is trying to keep people entangled, and it's deadly. Sex is the cause of death. Once there's sexual desire, there has to be identification of the self with the material body. It can't be done. Anyone who's under the influence of sex desire says, I'm not this body. It does not ring with conviction. So we have to be careful. And anyway, Prabhupada said about movies and cinemas, he said it's gambling, actually. When he says no gambling, he says, which includes sports, he says sports, cinema, and other so-called entertainments. In other words, wasting vast amounts of time, and with your mind absorbed intensely in something that has nothing to do with Krishna. That we should, every moment should be utilized for Krishna's service. This is one of the symptoms, at least, of a devotee in Bali. He's loath to spend a second in anything but Krishna's service. So one has to be careful about this, temptations that are offered, and now becoming so more accepted in this material world. So people get television, so they're going to watch National Geographic specials and things like that, and they're not going to look at sex, but just watch giraffes and things. But sooner or later, somebody turns the channel on, and, you know, something is there. So one has to be careful not to get entrapped in this thing. When actual Krishna consciousness develops, then people lose their interest. Devotees lose their interest, because sex desire is not any more attractive. It loses its attraction. That's hard to believe. But it's because there's something that's actually better than sex desire. And one develops in the mode of goodness, what they even be speak of a pure devotee, becomes less and less interested in the activities of the mode of passion. Mode of passion is exemplified by sexual activity. And this country is most in the mode of passion. Of course, as people more and more take to drugs, they go in the mode of ignorance, but where there's no sexual activity, there's just needles. But everyone knows that heroin addicts are celibate, unless they're prostitutes or something. But I mean, as far as their desires are fulfilled, they're all fulfilled in the needle. They don't have any. Not in the mode of passion. They're completely in the mode of ignorance. This is our higher position, that there's something better, that it's Prabhupada said there's another life. So civilization that's advanced in the matter of passion and ignorance, they won't be able to understand this. The Krishna consciousness can actually only be appreciated. I mean, the quality of life of Krishna consciousness can only be appreciated when we come at least to the mode of goodness. Then we can, we'll develop a taste for the activities of Krishna consciousness. But by all means, we can avoid sex life. Now there's two platforms for avoiding sex life. There's the brahmachari platform, and as I understand it, there's the grahastha platform. That's also a platform for avoiding sex life, but with a little license. Not much license, if you follow the regular, the principles properly. A little license. So depending, because otherwise, one should not be a cheater and try to be a brahmachari and still all the time mentally indulging in sex. So there's a little license, which from a brahmachari point of view is very broad. That is, you can talk to a woman privately. Even if in regulated grahastha life there's not so much opportunity for gross sex, still, from the point of view of an actual brahmachari, it's a great deal by being able to have association with a member of the opposite sex, have a family, all those things like that. That's also a regulated expression of sex indulgence. But done in the right way, one also becomes free from sex desire over some time. Okay. Any questions or comments? Yes? Yeah, I said something like that. I said we're making a lot of demigods pure devotees. You can see how the upper planets, it's pious sense gratification. Really nice, high class, pious sense gratification. Yeah. What a lot of people want. Yeah, well, by preaching Krishna consciousness and reminding people what they're... I think it's temporary. I think we'll get beyond this little stage. It's just that people are becoming householders now and they're discovering the opportunities of economic independence and things like that. And I hope it will pass as time goes by. And Krishna will not let them. Krishna is very kind. So people who are on their way to becoming demigods, if Krishna is very nice, he'll give them a really hard time in their pious sense gratification. And they'll eventually take complete shelter of Krishna. And Prabhupada claimed that's what happened to him. He said, Krishna made me a business failure. So there's no demigod life without business success, at least if you're trying to pull it off down here. You have to have money. The high standard of living of the upper planets is achieved here, a semblance of it, when there's lots and lots of money. So, but mostly if people just do certain things, like go to a morning program, chant their rounds. But a lot of times chanting becomes very, very offensive. People actually chant their rounds while they're watching TV, driving their cars, and you know, shopping in the malls. These are all very distracted state of mind. It does not lead to love of God. So these kinds of things have to be avoided. But the remedy has to be things like association of devotees, heavy duty sannyasis going around shaking the householders out of Maya, these kind of things. You know, the provision is there in the Vedic culture. You know, I don't think we really want to put a lot of people in the upper planets, really, but it may happen.
Planet. These upper planets are considered to be material planets?
Yeah, definitely.
That is the case, then why in this planet they say that sense gratification will distract you from the love of God?
It will.
Whereas Sukadevu, we say that he was in the love of gratification for millions of years, while glorifying God.
Says he wasn't engaged in sense gratification. He was in a position. He was in a position to engage in sense gratification, but actually he remained pure. He was not ordinary vidyadhara. So he was not enjoying sense gratification. Otherwise, they engage in sense gratification. They're pious. I mean, they glorify the Lord too, Indra, these people. They also glorify Krishna, but then they have problems. He has problems with people like Hiranya Kashipu and so on, because he's attached. Time to go.